You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickert.
First, a look at a topic relevant here in Wisconsin, crime on Indian reservations. Violent crime happens at twice the national average on reservations. Today, we're focusing on this issue nationally and here at the state level.
We have two guests with us, Kelly Lunny, senior correspondent for Government Executive, and Brandon Tomes, director of public relations for the Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And Brandon, it's good to have you along.
Thank you.
Well, Kelly, let's talk about that statistic that crime happens at twice the national average on Indian reservations. Can you give us a sense of the kinds of crime we're talking about and the frequency?
Sure. You know, across Indian reservations, there's about 325 Indian reservations in the U.S., and the number of violent crimes per 100,000 people for 2013 was 442. So, and that's a pretty high number. Putting that in a little bit better perspective, the violent crime rate for Detroit metropolitan area per 100,000 people was about 574. So it's less than that, but it's still, you know, you get a sense of how high that is given the fact that Detroit is one of the most dangerous cities in the country. So, you know, while there are other areas, obviously, that have a higher crime rate, it's still pretty high on Indian reservations. And when you consider the fact that many reservations don't have huge populations the way that major metropolitan areas do.
Well, to use the Detroit comparison, is the crime that's happening on Indian reservations the same kind of crime that, say, you're seeing in Detroit, or is it a whole separate set of issues and problems?
I am not familiar with, obviously, all Indian reservations or Detroit, but, you know, I think when it comes to reservations, you've got a couple of different issues. One, you know, some of the issues are unique to reservations in the sense that some places simply just do not have enough police officers, law enforcement, to patrol the amount of land that they have. For example, the reservation I was at in Wyoming is 2.2 million acres. It takes, you know, 50 minutes to go from one end of the reservation to the other before this federal program that was started in 2010 to combat violent crime. They had, you know, only about 10 law enforcement officers. That's not a lot of folks. So there's the isolation, the geographic isolation, and that's a big problem for a lot of the reservations out west. But then when you talk about some systemic issues in the community, drug and alcohol abuse, domestic violence, you know, that's a problem, a big problem in Indian reservations, but it's obviously a big problem in non-Native communities as well. Those things, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, are a huge contributing factor to crimes, regardless of the community.
And Brandon, let's turn to you. What do you see as being behind the high levels of crime on reservations?
Well, I think the underlying issues stem much deeper than just anecdotal references. I think when you look at what Native Americans have been subjected to over the last, you know, 50 to 100 to 150 years or longer, you really get a good sense of why there are so many social issues that our tribes are struggling with. So it's much deeper than just pointing the finger at drugs or alcohol or poverty. That all stems from the more important issue of people under siege for centuries now. And, you know, we're just at a point in time where our people are becoming more educated. We're becoming more active. We're becoming powerhouses, so to speak, as far as our political and economic structures. So, you know, things are definitely turning, but they just don't turn as fast as we'd like them to.
Are there problems policing crime, Brandon, that are particular to reservations, as you see it?
Yeah, I think Kelly was right in that, you know, geographically, reservations generally tend to be rural areas that are encompass vast distances and space. And when you have, you know, a reservation with many, many square miles and few resources, there's that issue of manpower and boots on the ground, so to speak. So, you know, I think it was a good observation.
And Kelly, the federal government recently decided to address this problem more aggressively and to get more officers on the ground in reservations. What happened?
Well, by all accounts, it was pretty successful. It was an initiative that happened over a 24-month period between 2010 and 2012. Essentially, they infused money and more law enforcement to four pilot Indian reservations. They were all out west, and they were included in the pilot because they had fairly high rates of violent crime on their reservations. The goal was to reduce violent crime by 5%. They wound up actually reducing it by about 35% during the life of the program across the four reservations. And, you know, right now the crime is still down, but it's creeping up a little bit at some of the reservations, particularly the one that I visited, because there have been, you know, the initiative is over for all intents and purposes in terms of funding. And they've had a great turnover with respect to law enforcement. And while there were other aspects, you know, in addition to the just boots on the ground, having more of a visual presence, which deterred crime, having the police out there, sort of renewing a little bit of the faith that the residents had that crime would be responded to, you know, there was also sort of a modernization of policing methods that went into it. You know, the idea of predictive policing, preventing crime where it's most likely to happen, a lot of those things were implemented, but because the focus is not there anymore, at least from the federal level, people feel like, you know, maybe that there's going to be a vacuum and that a lot of the success that had been there when there were a lot of officers and when there was the federal focus is going to be lost, you know, in the long term.
Well, it seems like, you know, from the results, a simple solution, you want to cut crime on reservations, you add a lot of officers to those reservations. Why isn't it ultimately that simple?
Well, I think that, you know, every reservation is obviously different, you know, in terms of geography, in terms of culture, in terms of population. You know, with respect to a lot of the Western reservations, the geography is daunting, especially for people who are not from there. A lot of officers that were at Wind River, for example, I talked with the police chief, and he talked about the difficulty of getting people from the outside in acclimating to that particular culture. It's the winters are long and hard. It's difficult for officers' families to acclimate sometimes. The pay is not always great. The federal law enforcement hiring process is often long and rigorous, and people just don't have sort of the time, energy, or perhaps, you know, financial resources to sort of wait 18 months or so before they get hired. So there's a lot of reasons why it's difficult for Indian reservations to keep police officers. But it's also, I mean, it is real difficult police work on a lot of these places. You know, there are many difficult crimes. There's mistrust between the residents and law enforcement for very good reasons. So, you know, you can't phone it in at these jobs. Mm.
Well, Brandon, I want to bring the story closer to home. You're with the Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians, and your tribe declared a state of emergency last year. What happened?
Well, back in spring of 2013, the tribe and the tribal government in particular took a very proactive and aggressive approach to many of the social ills that our tribe was facing. And in light of a number of overdoses and just a spike in crime and criminal activity on the reservation, they declared a state of emergency. And in that declaration, they brought the whole entire community together, and over 400 and some people showed up to a meeting, and they put everybody on notice. The government came out and said, you know, we're getting requests from the community. We need to do something about this. Our conventional methods are not working, and so we're going to step outside of the box, so to speak, on this issue and really aggressively approach the problem. And that's a multi-pronged approach. So it was definitely in response to a rise in crime, and ultimately, you know, we had lost tribal members to overdoses, and, you know, like I said, there was just a spike in domestic violence. And so when they made this declaration, many initiatives were born at that time and have been gradually implemented since. So it was definitely a request from the community to the tribal government to, you know, look at these issues and definitely take a proactive stance against some of the things that were happening here.
Right, and as you say, crime doesn't happen in a vacuum. There are issues that happen on reservations and elsewhere, but it can be a problem in particular on reservations: drunk driving, alcohol and drug abuse, domestic violence. Do you feel that your reservation and others in Wisconsin have the support to deal with those issues, which might be need to dealt with to be dealt with before the crimes can be addressed?
Well, I think an important thing to note is that these issues are not exclusive to Lac des Flambeaux or Native American Indian reservations. You know, these are issues and problems that mainstream society is dealing with, and every town and every city, you know, in America is dealing with these issues. So with that being said, you know, I really think that a number of steps have been taken to, you know, address these issues through partnerships with the state, through partnerships with the federal government. And, you know, some of these things, they take time to happen. And, you know, that's where our tribe is right now. We're at a crossroads. And I definitely believe that some of the things that are being done are addressing the needs of the community in a much more holistic sense rather than just a punitive approach.
We're talking with two guests right now about what's being done to stem crime on Native American reservations. Kelly Lunny is with us from Government Executive, and Brandon Tomes, the Director of Public Relations for the Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians.
And we want to hear from you on this issue, too. What do you think can be done to curb crime on reservations? Why do you think we see higher rates of some crime on reservations? And if you live on one of these tribal reservations or have lived there, share your experience with us as well. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk at WPR.org. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're picking up our discussion about crime on Indian reservations now. We have two guests with us, Kelly Lunny, Senior Correspondent for Government Executive, and Brandon Tomes, Director of Public Relations for the Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What kinds of solutions would you like to see to help the Native American community deal with the issue of crime? And if you've lived on a reservation, if you live there now, I'd like to hear your experiences, what you've seen on the ground. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk at WPR.org.
And Kelly, we talked about some of the challenges retaining police officers on the reservation. Some of it is geographic, some of it is cultural. What kind of relationship do the officers have with the communities, the people on the reservation, whether they're from an outside agency, the officers, or whether they're from the Bureau of Indian Affairs?
I think it really varies widely from reservation to reservation, and it also depends on who has jurisdiction. That's another really complicated aspect of law enforcement on reservations. Different groups have different pieces of the law enforcement pie, and whether it's federal or state or the tribal police, there is a difficulty that even those within the law enforcement community have interacting and trusting each other. And then when you talk about the residents, it's another layer. And I think that a lot of times, especially cops that are not from the area or from the reservation, who may be from another part of the country or another agency, they oftentimes don't take the time to get to know the community, and so the community feels like they don't understand our customs and our culture. I know, for example, again, when I was in Wyoming, I heard so many stories from people who obviously appreciated the infusion of cops to police the reservation, but a lot of these folks, you know, didn't understand the place. They didn't understand that there's two tribes on that particular reservation. They didn't understand their individual cultures and customs, so they would pull them over for having what they thought was marijuana in their car, but it happened to be sweetgrass or sage, which is, you know, something that they use in their culture. And so there was a lot of misunderstanding that went on, and that created even sort of a deeper fissure of distrust that, you know, already existed. I mean, fortunately for that reservation, the officers got training and, you know, they tried to sort of mend some of that and build a rapport. But I think a lot of times the problem is that there isn't enough sort of going and talking and being into the community before a crime happens. You know, you really, as a cop, you got to walk your beat. You got to be in the culture. You got to know people. That's where you build the trust. The trust doesn't happen, you know, after the crime occurs. It's got to already be embedded.
And Brandon, how would you answer that question? What has your experience been?
Well, I think some of the issues lie in the fact that, you know, due to our issues, meaning America's issues with drugs, alcohol, violence, crime, gangs, a lot of our children at times have witnessed a parent, an uncle, an older sibling, an older brother or sister arrested, or have had some sort of negative experience with the law enforcement within these Native communities. So when you instill that image into a young person's mind, that initial contact with that police officer or that law enforcement community, you're really building the foundation for what sort of eyes, how those eyes view law enforcement. So when they see their family members being taken away in handcuffs, it definitely builds an element of distrust within those children. And those children ultimately grow up to be our workers in our community, our parents, our leaders. And it, like Kelly said, it really takes a specific and a concerted effort to engage the community on a very grassroots, really, I don't want to say primal, but a real cultural level where you understand what a gesture means, whether that's a facial gesture, what a certain look means, you know, what sort of plants and herbs that particular tribe uses in their customs, like she mentioned, sweetgrass and sage. I myself have had that experience of being pulled over and searched and had a bag of tobacco, you know, field tested on the back of a squad car for marijuana. So, you know, I really think that it's going to take a concerted effort by the law enforcement community, which our tribe has definitely done, to engage the community and do it on a very grassroots, a very simple level, where these children and young adults can interact with our law enforcement community in a positive way, in ways that build that rapport and build that trust. And I think that would definitely speak to the longevity. Our current police chief, Bob Brandenburg, who has done an outstanding job, has been on our force for 20-some years, and he's not the norm. But I think that says something for, first off, for what he's done in learning our culture and what it takes to be involved in the community. But secondly, it says a lot about our community and, you know, the engagement and the relationship that we've had with our law enforcement. It hasn't always been glamorous, but I think that you build on those little victories, and I think that that's what needs to happen on our reservations.
And we have an email here from Christine who says, can you ask the guests about how federal crimes such as rape and murder are not addressed efficiently by law enforcement officials because of the lack of jurisdiction by tribal police? My understanding is that the FBI needs to be called in with capital crimes and that the wait is sometimes long. Kelly, what do you think?
That is correct. I mean, when it comes to the worst types of crimes, homicide, rape, the federal government, the FBI, is the prosecuting body there. Now, having said that, you know, it depends on the reservation who the, you know, which sort of law enforcement force is the one who does the investigation. In some instances, it's the BIA who working with the tribal police. Sometimes it's the state. But in terms of, you know, having sort of that authority over it, it's generally the federal government when it comes to crimes like that. Now, you know, lesser crimes, it gets a little more, I guess, sort of patchwork quilt-like because you've got more actors in it. But you know, there is concern over how long it takes the FBI to prosecute some of these crimes, and, you know, some of that is caseload, and they have a lot of work and not enough AUSAs, assistant U.S. attorneys, in their particular office. Again, especially with a lot of these offices out west. They don't have a ton of staff. And so, you know, you're working with, you know, three or four assistant U.S. attorneys who have a huge caseload. A lot of times cases don't go forward because the victims don't necessarily want to continue and go forward with the prosecution, because sometimes it's a family member. They're reluctant to go through that whole difficult judicial process. Another problem you see is, again, especially out west, where the courthouse is, where a lot of these trials take place, is very far away from where many of where the reservation is, and it takes, you know, it can take 3 or 4 hours by car to get to some of these places, and, you know, people on the reservation don't have the time or the resources necessarily to make those journeys. So there's a whole host of problems that go along with that particular, you know, law and order process when mm-hmm. how it relates to the federal government.
And Brandon, I want to end with you. I want to ask you about a quote from the piece in Government Executive. This is not from your reservation, but there was a member quoted from the reservation who said they just wanted to know that the next generation would be all right. Do you think that you're on the right track to answering that question with an affirmative? And we're in our final moments here.
I would answer that question with a definite affirmative yes. You know, in particular, our tribe has, like I said earlier, made tremendous steps addressing some of the social ills that plague our community here. And speaking, you know, in a general sense for tribes across the nation, I mean, we're much more educated. We're in the know now, and I think that we definitely have the resources and the wherewithal. I mean, look at what we've been through as Indian people for the last 100 or 200 years. And so, we're at a crossroads, and I think we're on the right path. It's just a matter of implementing our initiatives and making sure that we see them through.
Brandon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Kelly, thank you to you as well.
Thanks so much.
We've been speaking with Kelly Lunny, senior correspondent for Government Executive, and Brandon Tomes, director of public relations for the Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians. They were with us to talk about crime on reservations nationally and in Wisconsin.
I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. News is next on Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.